You and I back together again, wrapping up a very busy week, Friday, June 17th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. I talked about a new national poll, surprised me, that indicates former President Donald Trump's political future may not be all that bleak. Family Institute of Connecticut Executive Director Peter Wolfgang talked about the impending U.S. Supreme Court decision on abortion. Journal Inquirer Manchester columnist Chris Powell making his monthly check-in with us. He had a few thoughts this time around on the coming observance of Juneteenth.
I want to start today, if I can, with an example I talk about all the time on this show of Americans' great capacity to what we call compartmentalize. And especially when it comes to politics and we see our guy, our gal, our political fave, whether it's old or new or left or right or Democrat or Republican, whether it's on a local level in Bridgeport, Stratford, Milford, the Valley, whatever, town races, city races, up in the Capitol in Hartford or nationally. Americans have a wonderful capacity, and this is nothing new. I mean, we've had this around for years and years and years. But we have a wonderful capacity as Americans and as, you know, human beings to hold on to what we like about someone and to not even consider what their downsides may be. Because, of course, the human condition always asks, what's in it for me, right? What's in it for me? Yeah, I know he did that, she did that. I know they were caught doing this and that. I mean, look at, you know, certain mayors in several municipalities and governors in this state who were caught red-handed, you know, serve prison, jail time, no disputing what they did, and they're welcomed back with open arms. Well, listen, maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe I'm just a stinking fool, and I don't really get the human condition. What am I blabbing about? Well, I'll tell you, kids. I looked at this story when I saw this today. And goes, son of a gun! You gotta love this. This is I'm reading this out of Yahoo News, which is they aggregate news, and Yahoo tends to be center left. And there's a new poll out. And it shows more and more and more about and maybe illustrates the disconnect that people have in this country. You know, they say we're two separate nations. We're bifurcated, you know, right down the middle. Maybe in our politics, maybe in our social values. And maybe, as I like to say, the most graphic of which is how we perceive issues and the importance to us. As inflation keeps rising and recession fears loom, a new Yahoo News YouGov poll. Now, again, Yahoo and YouGov, this is not a poll from, you know, the National Review. This is not a poll from the Federalist Society. This is not a poll from Fox News or any, you know, right-leaning organization. This is Yahoo News. They are center left, even further left, and YouGov says here that Joe Biden is currently in the worst shape of his presidency. The poll done recently, June 10 to June 13, finding that. Now, get this. And this must be driving some people nuts, right? I mean, I read some of the stuff and I go, well, son of a gun, maybe I am wrong, which I'm free to admit because I get paid either way, you know, whether I'm right or wrong. You know, it's not like I have incentive clauses in my contract here to be more right than wrong or whatever. If another presidential election were held today, more registered voters, and again, registered voters is better than just polling Americans, but not as good as likely voters. But get this. If the election were held today, largely because of economic issues, more registered voters would vote for Donald Trump than Joe Biden. How about that? So despite everything going on in D.C. and with the January 6th committee and it being the lead story since basically January 6th happened over a year and change ago, roughly half, maybe a little less than half of the country would still vote for Donald Trump. I'm not making a judgment as to what people vote or how they vote. I just find it fascinating that maybe the powers that be in the media, maybe the powers that be in Washington don't quite understand that people just are dug in sometimes. You know, people are just dug in. And listen, it's the same thing on the left. I mean, there are people who, you know, you could point out the faults and foibles of the Clintons or of the Obamas, and they, well, we don't care. Nope, nope, that's it. We don't care. I mean, one of the things that I was held against the Obama years, for example, was, I mean, they talk about Trump in the media and Nixon in the media. Nobody was worse with the media than the Obama years. I mean, they were threatening to put people in jail. They were threatening illegal wiretaps and things like this. Oh, no, 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 no. The Obama years, and it didn't get a lot of play because the media knew they had to play nice and you couldn't upset the king and the queen and you wouldn't get access. So it's just interesting, though, the capacity of Americans to compartmentalize. So if the election were held today, Donald Trump 44, Joe Biden 42, how about that? Ha, 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 ha. And this comes, as Yahoo says, even though the House January 6th committee has spent the last week likening what Trump did to a seditious conspiracy. Since Mr. Biden took office, no previous Yahoo News YouGov poll has shown him trailing Trump, though Biden's most recent leads have been within the margin of error. Like this one is for Trump. 1 year ago, Biden led Trump by 9 points. Biden won the White House by more than 7 million votes, says here. So how about that? What do you make of this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Among all Americans, Donald Trump now has a higher personal favorability rate than Joe Biden as well. This is funny. Oh, no, Paul, it's tragic. The country's going to crumble. Look, all you people talking about a civil war and the crumbling of the country, the country's not going anywhere. Relax. Calm down. Get your cameras and your microphones out of Washington. Get them out of New York, out of L.A., out of Chicago. The country's doing fine. It's a little expensive out there now, but the country's not going anywhere. So everybody, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Doom and Gloom on both sides of the aisle, take a breath. But this is pretty funny. I'm sorry. Well, how could you say that's funny, Paul? It just is. It is. I mean, you would think that Mr. Trump's favorability would be 10, 15, 20%. No, look at this. You know why? I think our caller Randy said this the other day. Americans like, there's a certain chunk of America, probably rural, probably a little older, that they like a guy with balls, and they like a woman with, figuratively, culones. You know what I mean? Probably not the physical kind. But maybe this is it. Among all Americans, Mr. Trump now has a higher personal favorability rate than Joe Biden, 43 to 40. Nearly two-thirds of independents have an unfavorable opinion of Biden. Just 28% say they would vote for him over Trump. So, again, this is the hardcore conservative part of the country, although it's interesting that almost 30% of independents say they'd pick Trump again. Wow, look at that. Maybe America does like a guy who is a little ham-fisted. Maybe. In recent days, a series of stories questioning whether Biden will run for re-election in 2024 have surfaced in the press. And they're going to see this now. See, any notion that Joe Biden would run again in 2024 is ludicrous. Who in their right mind would vote for the guy again? He can hardly walk some days. And I'm sorry, I'm not being ageist. We're all getting there, kids. I mean, that's why I make it a point, you know, unless the weather is severely bad, I'll walk 45 minutes an hour a night after I get done with this show, because I want to make sure I can move at an advanced age. And look, Joe Biden's not crippled. I understand that. But age is a thing. And I read a piece the other day, I think it was in one of the progressive-leaning magazines, that said, come on, who are we kidding? Joe Biden's not running again. And now you see, you know, you see this number. How about that? What do you think of this? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. registered voters, 1,500 of them across the country, which is a decent sampling. Donald Trump, 44. Joe Biden, 42. This must be driving the Democrats nuts. And this is a poll that's coming out, you know, right during the January 6th thing. Americans can compartmentalize, kids. Let me tell you something. They can say, hey, my guy or my gal, do or die. We've been like that for a couple of hundred years, though. Right? Right? While everybody else in Congress stinks except my guy or my gal because they got federal money to put up that sandbox at the elementary school. Yeah. There you go. How about that? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. 57% of Trump voters who voted for him last time say he should mount another bid. Just 21% say he shouldn't. 57% of independents say Trump should not try to make a second comeback or a comeback round two. So again, maybe this is why he will not back down, right? Maybe he sees these numbers. What do you think? All right, by all reckoning, it seems that next week the U.S. Supreme Court is going to release some, high-profile, very controversial decisions. One, of course, could be the final draft of a previously leaked draft decision that would pretty much nullify Roe v. Wade. A lot of scholars have said over the years it was bad law to begin with, should have never been litigated that way. And it will essentially, most people saying, as already is, essentially hand the issue of abortion on demand back to the states. Country looks like it'll be about a 50-50 split. But here in Blue Connecticut, probably nothing will change. But there is a fear now of what happens in the wake, particularly in the wake of any decision, particularly with violence to people and or pregnancy centers and or abortion clinics, whatever. And to talk about that from his group's point of view, the executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut, Peter Wolfgang, joins us for a few minutes. Peter, it's Paul here. Been too long. How are you?
Paul, thanks so much for having me. I'm good.
Well, I wanted to have you on, Peter, because I saw you had the press availability in Hartford a couple of days ago. And, Peter, I know there is a concern, and I think it's well-founded because we're already starting to see this across the country. And I think there's a concern, Peter, correct, that cooler heads may not prevail, at least immediately out of the gate next week and into the weeks following of what the high court might say here. What are your thoughts on that, particularly for Connecticut?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And it's not a hypothetical. It's already happening. We are already in a crisis situation because about a month ago, in an unprecedented move, a draft version of this decision that might overturn Roe versus Wade was leaked to the public. And what happened after that is, you know, we are now in a situation where there are two pro-abortion domestic terror groups. One is called Ruth Sent Us, and the other is, it was James Revenge, something
yes,
like
yeah,
that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so these two groups have already engaged in acts of domestic terror where something like 23 pro-life organizations, mostly crisis pregnancy centers, that aren't even involved in politics. All they really do is just serve women in crisis, but 23 centers have been vandalized so far. And these groups have issued ultimatums. They've issued threats. One of the groups, one of the pro-life groups that was attacked was not a pregnancy center. It was an organization like my own. In fact, it's our sister organization in Wisconsin. Their name is Wisconsin Family Action. Their office was firebombed. Two Molotov cocktails were thrown into their office, and someone spray-painted graffiti saying, "If abortions are not safe, neither are you." So, I mean, they're issuing very specific threats. The language of their threats are escalating. Meanwhile, down in Washington, someone is being prosecuted now for the attempted murder of Justice Kavanaugh, but it's being treated as a local crime story. Nancy Pelosi slow-walked a bill to give added security to Supreme Court justices, and 27 Democrats voted against it. And so meanwhile, so here in Connecticut, yesterday, the Family Institute of Connecticut and the Catholic Conference and the Pregnancy Care Coalition of Connecticut, we held a joint press conference calling upon elected officials and our opponents in the abortion debate to denounce this, Paul, because, you know, there has been sporadic violence over these last 49 years in the name of anti-abortion against abortion centers. And the pro-life movement has always denounced it. I'm not seeing those sorts of denunciations from the pro-abortion movement regarding what's happened in this last month. And even the last 24 hours since we had that press conference gives me grave concern, because what we've seen in the news media is that Nancy DiNardo, who's the head of the Democratic Party, and Jillian Gilchrist, who is a Democrat state rep from West Hartford, they both responded to our press conference by attacking us. And, you know, Paul, this is what's wrong with our politics. I mean, this is a very serious concern that we have. And the folks on the other side, they didn't react like human beings. They reacted like partisan hacks, like this is just a run-of-the-mill spat over abortion rights. This is something beyond even that.
Peter, hang on. We'll be back with more fascinating discussion here with the executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut, Peter Wolfgang, on what could be a very tense week coming up, as the High Court will likely hand down decisions on abortion, guns, and the like. More with Peter Wolfgang coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Peter Wolfgang is with us, the executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut, the state's top pro-life organization here, and we're talking about what hopefully will not happen but may happen coming up next week. You know, Peter, you were talking about this group Ruth sent us, and I'm doing a lot of reading about this, and I wonder, Peter, and again, it doesn't matter whether I'm pro-choice or pro-life or whatever, but I wonder if anybody in this group Peter Ruth sent us has read any of the numerous articles that have come up over the past couple of weeks where Ruth Bader Ginsburg, hardly a conservative, a proud progressive, said over the years that Roe v. Wade was bad law. And it's not that she was trying to go pro-life all of a sudden, but she kind of predicted the exact thing that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg's position in all of this, she never liked Roe v. Wade. And she of course, was a champion of abortion rights. But she always thought that Roe v. Wade was a very poorly reasoned case. And there's a lot of people who are pro-choice. You know, it's possible to find some common ground sometimes between pro-choice and pro-life. I don't know that we're necessarily as completely polarized as we are sometimes made out to be. But when I see, for instance, the reactions to the press conference we had yesterday, I realize why we are so polarized, why people see it that way. Because there are people who have vested interest in not finding common ground. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a good example of this, where, and of course you see it too in her friendship with the late Justice Scalia, that sometimes you can reach across the divide. And Ginsburg, you know, she understood that Roe v. Wade was not good law. That may be one of the reasons why after 49 years this thing is going down. I've read a lot of great pro-choice people who are personally committed to pro-choice, but are very honest and serious legal historians who understood that Roe v. Wade was bad law, that it deserves to go down, and they don't lie to the public the way political operatives do. They will tell you the truth, which is that if Roe v. Wade does go down, abortion's not going to become illegal the next day. All that does is return it to the states. And here in Connecticut, unfortunately, in my view, but we have a very strong pro-abortion, pro-choice majority in our state capital, and I don't think anything's going to happen to abortion rights anytime soon. I think that will be the next long twilight struggle. But, you know, there are areas of common ground. The Quinnipiac poll showed that 70% of Connecticut voters support parental notification. That was a majority among both Democrats, Republicans, and independents. So, you know, when cooler heads do prevail, if please God they will, there's actually areas of common ground where we could agree.
And, Peter, you mentioned this before the break. I was not surprised, but I was disappointed. Yes, you mentioned the response both from Nancy DiNardo, the state Democratic Party chairwoman, and Representative Democratic State Rep Gilchrist, of just, I don't know, lashing out or playing what I like to call, Peter, index card politics. Oh, let's see. Here it is. Card number 53. Right. I've got to say this. I mean, there's just no, Peter, there's no depth of thought there. To me, when politicians on both sides of the aisle, Peter, not just Democrats, but when politicians come out with these blanket sledgehammer statements, to me, you know what that means? It means, well, I'm not really considering the feelings or why my opponent may feel differently. Maybe it's their religion. Maybe it's what they've gone through in their lives. But, you know, we're not seeing that here.
Well, Paul, you're exactly right. And, you know, if you in the news accounts of yesterday, if you read the comments by both Chris Healy and myself, we called out leaders of both parties to speak out against this. We've not heard anything for the most part from either party. So we were trying to make a nonpartisan point. And somehow the Democrats, or at least Nancy DiNardo and Jillian Gilchrist, index card politics is exactly what it was. The responses were very robotic. This was an opportunity to respond to us as human beings, not as partisan hacks. But unfortunately, they chose the low road.
Peter Wolfgang, Peter, it's been good chatting with you. It's been too long. Peter is the executive director of the Family Institute of Connecticut. So we will cross our fingers and see what happens next week with the abortion decision and others coming down from the High Court. Peter, thank you. Take care. And I'm sure in the near future we will chat again and we'll be in touch. Good weekend, Peter. Take care.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. We have him on round once a month or so to give us his reading as to what's going on in Connecticut. And as we go into this weekend, which is a long weekend for some, commemorating Juneteenth, Chris Powell joins us from the Journal Inquirer of Manchester to talk about at least one of his recent columns on that. Chris, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Great to be with you, Paul.
Well, thank you, Chris. Chris, you wrote what I thought was a really good column the other day, More Holidays Won't Address Connecticut's Racial Failings. And I know we've discussed this over and over again, Chris, but it's a good time to let the folks know that, I don't know, this is kind of dressing a wound that never goes away.
Yeah, I've got a few problems with Juneteenth, and I don't want to ruin people's weekend parties. I hope they have a good time, but first place, the holiday is a false premise. Supposedly, it's to mark the end of slavery in the United States. But it doesn't mark the end of slavery in the United States. It marks the end of slavery in Texas, I guess, in June 1865. But slavery continued in the United States for another 6 months in states that had slavery but never left the Union, and so were not covered by the Emancipation Proclamation. The slavery wasn't ended in the United States until, I guess, it was December 1865, when the 13th Amendment was adopted. So, you know, this is false education. But, you know, last week the governor had a special ceremonial re-signing of the Juneteenth holiday bill. He'd already signed it in May, but he went to New London to sign it next to the Amistad slave revolt replica ship there to, you know, get more publicity for what the administration supposedly was doing for black people. And it struck me as just such a terrible distraction from, you know, what's really going to go on here. I mean, what does Juneteenth really do for people? It's not going to do anything except probably give, you know, government employees another paid day off, which, you know, means less services for the public or higher taxes for nothing. It's going to distract from the racial failings we still have terribly here in Connecticut, and in education and poverty and crime and lack of integration. You know, we've already got a racial holiday in Martin Luther King Day. Do we need a second one? I think we need we need better policy to elevate the poor than we need a second holiday here. What really set me off, the Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz was at the ceremony in London, and she said, quote, "Today we're here to recognize the trauma of our African-American community and to start in a small way to correct the wrongs of our past," end quote. And I'm thinking, we're starting now? I mean, we started with the 13th Amendment. We went on with the Freedmen's Bureau. And then, you know, in recent decades, we've had civil rights acts and voting rights acts and poverty programs targeted at minorities, and we still have huge disparities in the living conditions of between white people and black people, and my problem is that we don't audit the failure of these policies to end the disparities. And what do we do? You know, we call another holiday to congratulate ourselves on our our open-mindedness, on our desire for better living conditions for black people. Well, on either side of that ceremonial re-signing in New London, there were fatal shootings in Hartford and Bridgeport, and a 16-year-old kid in New Haven was shot in a drive-by shooting. You know, why didn't they have the ceremonial re-signing in Hartford or Bridgeport and New Haven? And I think that's why.
Good point there, Chris. Chris, hang on, because just what you mentioned about not being able to do better on this was kind of what I talked about yesterday in a situation that was actually front page news, but I don't know how many people put two and two together here. More with my friend Chris Powell coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Chris Powell with his monthly check-in. Chris, the former managing editor and currently still an outstanding columnist and opinion writer for the Journal Inquirer of Manchester. Chris, you probably saw the same news I did, and we talked about it yesterday. America, based in Enfield, that, used to have a bigger footprint there. They got rid of the manufacturing there. Some of the U.S. corporate offices are still there. So, Chris, Lego announces yesterday, hey, a new $1 billion facility in Virginia. And I'm like, well, okay. But it harkened back, Chris, it made me think of a couple of conversations I had years ago with folks from a youth poverty organization, and one of them, I'll never forget, he pointed out to me, he said the biggest driver, Chris, or one of the biggest drivers of the continued problem with poverty, especially in the inner cities, is that Connecticut cannot land. And for decades we haven't, Chris, those decent blue-collar, decent-paying $45,000, $50,000, $60,000manufacturing jobs that are the bedrock and the foundation for a lot of people in a lot of urban areas. They help keep the families together. And this person who was an expert in this said, when that left the state and is not coming back, again, Chris, it's one of these bigger problems that is not, remedied by signing things in photo ops here. And I thought thinking about that yesterday made me rethink that.
Yeah, well, I go through Bridgeport occasionally, and Bridgeport still has all these hulking factory buildings that are, crumbling and unoccupied. And it's emblematic of our industrial decline in Connecticut. Look, your call letters used to stand for industrial capital of Connecticut, mm-hmm. as I recall. Part of this loss of manufacturing is the rise of the third world. They're going to do less sophisticated manufacturing work for far less wages and far more exploitation by their employers. And I'm not sure that we can we can beat that. But I think we fail insofar as we don't educate our kids well so that they can gain jobs with higher skills. Mm-hmm. Look, last week New Haven's schools had a conference on reading instruction, what kind of reading instruction they should have. And they were having that conference in large part because for years now, most of the kids in New Haven school system, and the same thing could be said about Hartford and Bridgeport, they're not reading at grade level. They're reading far behind grade level. They get out of high school on the basis of social promotion. They get their diplomas. They've got to compete with the rest of the world too. And if half the kids in this country are growing up in a home without two parents. That is it signifies child neglect. Teachers can't make up for this when kids don't have parents. Kids don't perform well in school because they don't have the support at home. Do we address this in Connecticut? Not really. There's manufacturing in Connecticut. There's a lot of high-value manufacturing, high-skill manufacturing in Connecticut. The subcontractors for Pratt & Whitney and Sikorsky mm-hmm. and other military contractors. They are very much in need of skilled employees, machine tool operators, things like that. You know, we don't have them. You know, why? I think in large part because of the family breakdown and the poor performance in the schools.
But yet, Chris, if you mention that, and I've done it sometimes, you know, in online forums, just discussing. I mean, you know, you're shouted down as a bigot. You automatically. I remember doing this, Chris, saying, you know, quite eloquently, I thought about the situation you just pointed out, and I was, well, oh, so what do you have against single parents? I said, I never said I did. It's like, but I dared mention this, and I got shouted down. It's just amazing.
Well, just yesterday, the day before, our State Department of Children and Families announced that it was having its annual Fatherhood Celebration Day to try to remind everybody of the, you know, essential nature of the father to his children. And the DCF statement pointed to 12 variables that are immensely improved when a man is involved in the lives of his children. I don't think there's any dispute anymore in the social science. Fathers are just, you know, crucial to childhood, to a successful childhood, to successful education, to, you know, health and well-being of kids. And that anybody, you know, you or me or anybody else, should get disparaged for pointing this out is it's just a sign of, you know, the states and the country's decline. We just can't address this candidly.
Chris Powell, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend, sir. We'll chat next month. Chris Powell, Journal Inquirer of Manchester. Make sure, make it priority one that you read his stuff before anything else. Trust me on this. Chris,
thank you, Paul.
Chris, be good. Take it easy. Bye-bye.